Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The New Statesman.
I mean, the sixth richest country in the world, you'd think that you'd be able to access dentistry here.
You think it'd be a lot better, but obviously something's going wrong.
NHS dentists are in crisis. People up and down the country have been struggling to get appointments for the past few years, forcing some to pay inflated prices for private treatment or ignore their oral health until it's reached an unbearable point. This crisis is also greatly impacting children across the nation. And today, the number one reason children are admitted to hospital is due to severe dental issues. So how did we get here? Why is the UK facing this Dickensian rot in 2024? Hello, I'm Anoushka Kellyan, the New Statesman's Britain editor, and you're listening to the New Statesman podcast. I'm joined today in the studio by Sarah Darwood, Senior Associate Editor of Spotlight, the New Statesman's policy section, and policy correspondent Harry Clark Isidio. Hi both, thanks so much for coming in. Now you've both been following the developments of this crisis really closely, and Harry, I know you recently went to speak to dentists in Birmingham, along with Preet Gill, who's the Shadow Minister for Primary Care and Public Health. And we'll be drawing on this throughout our conversation. But first of all, can you just give us the overall picture? I mean, what is the extent of the problem right now?
It's quite bad, and that's putting it mildly. I mean, this issue sort of first grabbed headlines recently when images of people queuing round corners in Bristol trying to sign up for a new dental practice that was opening. But really, this issue stems from as far back as 2006, when the current framework known as the NHS contract between the government, the NHS and dental practices was first introduced. Obviously, the pandemic did have quite a big impact on this. Mm-hmm. It basically, like with all areas of health, just suddenly saw a lot of people drop off the edge of treatment. So just in before the pandemic, in 2018-19, a number of treatments sort of reached a peak of 40 million. And then that during the pandemic reached a low of 11 million. And then since then, it's bounced back to around 32.5 million. But of course, that's still a missing 7.5 million people. And a big part of that now, as most of our listeners would be able to attest to, is a access issue. The BBC did an investigation that in 2022, they found that 9 out of 10 dentists weren't taking on any new patients under the NHS. And, you know, that included a lot of dental deserts. So the southwest, Yorkshire and the Humber, and the northwest are particularly bad hotspots. So it's a sort of worst case cocktail of poor access in terms of getting dentist treatment, but also, I suppose, a case of people just going to the dentist less. So it's really just a consequence of a number of factors, really.
Yeah. And how is it affecting people? You know, what impact is this having on people's lives?
Yeah. So it's not something that sort of works in isolation. I mean, obviously, if someone's experiencing quite a lot of issues with their teeth, it can obviously have a daily impact on their day-to-day lives. But obviously, there's a strong correlation between people coming from disadvantaged backgrounds and them suffering from tooth decay. So it normally just compounds one issue after the other. So, you know, some of the people we spoke to when I went on my trip to Birmingham, they had spoke on how tooth decay and the symptoms that, and the problems associated with that were just a wider sort of issue that can feed into depression and their sort of struggles to get by. So it's really something that just is, I suppose, adding to a lot of people's problems.
Yeah, we all know that if you've got toothache, it's just one of the things that you just cannot ignore. Let's listen to some of that reporting now, actually.
Do you see a lot of children coming in with pain? And
yeah, with pain and decay. That's the majority of what I do, actually, is seeing it? A lot of kids that are in pain. And it's really hard because we want to just help them and make sure that they get them out of pain. That's really important for us.
I've had root canals, I've had fill-ins, but I've had to wait so long. I was at a point where I nearly overdosed on painkillers because I was just in pain every day. But at the same time, what can I do? I can't get an appointment. So I'm currently still waiting for treatment to have, I think, another root canal. But again, I haven't got the meniscus private anymore. And I just wait for another, it's going to be probably another year. And by then, it'll probably be a tooth extraction.
So is this rotting teeth, is it basically, that you're dealing with?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. I ain't got a bottle to pull them out myself. So.
Some really harrowing stuff there from your reporting. And I do encourage our listeners to watch video from your trip as well, which is on our YouTube. But before we get into how this has all happened, how this mess has come about, can we just reflect on what this actually says, you know, the bigger picture about the UK today? I mean, we've seen people doing DIY dentistry, so pulling their own teeth out, trying to do their own fillings. They're so desperate. Police having to manage that huge queue in Bristol that you mentioned, Harry, where a new dentist practice was opening up. And this is an area of the country, like you said, that's a dental desert. I remember going to report on the Kingswood by-election, which is on the outskirts of Bristol, and it was coming up on the doorstep. It's very much a political issue now as well. And then there's even been stories of Brits travelling to Ukraine, which, let's not forget, is still an active war zone, to go and get dentistry done because they cannot access the affordable dentistry that they need to be done here. So, I mean, we talk about broken Britain, it is a bit of a cliched phrase, but I mean, if it is anything a greater sort of symbol of Britain's decay than literal tooth decay.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing that sort of stands out to me is that, I mean, it's sort of one issue within the wider context of the NHS dealing mm-hmm. with record backlogs, and the Institute for Government found that all public services except for schools were performing worse on the eve of the pandemic than when the Tories actually came into the office. And like you said, YouGov polling found that 1 in 5 Britons were not registered with a dentist. 1 in 10 had been resorting to doing their own DIY dentistry. You know, it's sort of within the wider context of it, it sort of is this sort of slow decline of our health, which in the end does also cost us in the long term, not just in terms of the long term public health of the nation, but in treating this, it will inevitably cost the NHS more to deal with emergency tooth extractions, for example.
When we're talking about the wider impact on the health service as well, because people can't access these NHS dentists, tens of thousands of people are turning up in A&E and at GP surgeries with dental issues like tooth decay, despite these places not really having the training or the expertise to help these people. So, I mean, just for some figures, between April 2022 and May 2023, 30,000 children and 70,000 adults in England were admitted to A&E with tooth decay. So I think if we look at the broader picture here, we already know the NHS is in crisis. We know A&E is facing sort of record waiting times, huge backlogs, and there are huge sort of appointment backlogs. And this is all just exacerbating the wider health crisis that the NHS is facing, and also making sort of worse issues and worse sort of health further down the line because things are getting missed. People aren't having that preventative care, which then sort of leads to that spike in serious illnesses, which we know we're projected by 2040 to have a serious sort of increase in serious conditions such as cancer, diabetes, heart disease. So if we look at the broader picture, the NHS dentistry crisis is contributing to that wider NHS crisis.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, okay. And so we've heard the extent of the problem. What's behind it? Why is it happening? Can you give me some factors that have led to this?
Yeah, so as Harry alluded to earlier, a lot of it is to do with the model of how NHS dentistry works. So since almost the birth of the NHS, there have been dental charges for most NHS patients. But since 2006, that's when the latest NHS dental contract came in. And that's the thing that has caused sort of most dispute amongst dentists, amongst amongst unions because it essentially penalises both dentists and patients. So without trying to get too technical about it, so NHS dental services are free for a small group of people. So this includes pregnant people, children, people on low income benefits, but otherwise patients pay based on treatment banding. Mm-hmm. So charges increase for more complex treatment, and this ranges from about £25 for a sort of checkup consultation through to £300 for your more complex treatments. Mm-hmm. But essentially patients pay one fee regardless of how many treatments they need within a band. So for example, if they need one filling or three fillings, it will cost the same, mm-hmm. Even though it's taken dentists much more resource, much more time. So the way this works essentially means that dentists are financially penalised for doing more NHS work. This has disincentivised dentists from doing that NHS work because they're not being properly financially compensated for it. At the same time, they have targets they need to meet around sort of NHS work, which is putting pressure on them because they're doing more work than the sort of targets allow for, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard dentists actually end up sometimes paying for the work that they're doing on NHS patients because they're not compensated for, if they want to do a proper treatment on the patient, then they're not compensated for all of that work.
Exactly. And so they're not being financially compensated. At the same time, they're overworked, they're stressed, they're burnt out, which has caused more and more dentists, as we've seen across the whole NHS workforce crisis, more and more dentists to leave NHS work altogether. I think around 2,000 NHS dentists left during the pandemic. All of this essentially means that alongside these sort of additional pressures of the backlog from the pandemic, lack of access, it essentially means that the contract penalises dentists and it needs reforming, essentially.
Yeah, and let's listen to what the dentist that you spoke to had to say, because he was talking about morale and also the impact of the pandemic on his work.
Morale is very low in dentistry at the moment. Dentists are overworked. Dental teams are stretched and overworked. COVID was a big problem. In many ways, we're still catching up on the backlog of care needed because we were shut down. I take that back, actually. Dentistry wasn't shut down, but patients were not coming. And you can understand why. But everything slowed down over COVID and we're still dealing with the backlog. And we're super stretched. We're open 8 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock at night now. We've had to increase our opening hours in order to try and meet the demands of our population.
And as with everything I feel like we talk about on the podcast these days, spending cuts are obviously a part of this story.
Absolutely. So as we've seen across the NHS, but particularly in NHS dentistry, it's really been deprioritised by successive governments. So funding has been cut in real terms for decades. At the same time, patient charges are going up, but funding coming from government is not keeping pace. So NHS charges for treatment have increased by around 45% over the past decade, while the dentistry budget from government fell by about 8% in real terms. So for example, this would mean a patient looking to have a filling or an extraction, which is considered a band 2 charge, that's gone up from about £50 to about £73 since April 2014. So we've got this dual issue of patients being charged more, but the service not being appropriately funded.
I mean, the issue that came up for me was inflation. Mm-hmm. You know, over the last few years, I was speaking to people within the sector and they sort of were going, well, everyone would like to take on more NHS capacity. I don't think anyone is sort of doing it from an ideological perspective. It's more the case of, well, if inflation for specific equipment is going up above the headline rate of inflation, because it's obviously not flatly distributed across the economy. Services are going up. The costs for these things are going up 10, 15, 20%, but the NHS contract isn't going up in the same way. Then this is an active loss for dentists to take on NHS patients. And so it feeds into the wider problem.
I mean, it's just such a warped incentive, isn't it? And it means that inevitably dentists are incentivized to move over to only doing private practice. Is that something that you found in your reporting?
I think it's one of those things where it's, you know, if they are actively making losses, then it's it's understandable in a certain context that, you know, you can't always take on as much NHS capacity as you want to. But the government seemed to make it, I suppose, a bit of a culture war dividing line. Victoria Atkins, the health secretary, went on Good Morning Britain, I think, and sort of when announcing the government's plan, sort of alluded to the fact that the market is changing and that private dental procedures have become more popular, and sort of attributing blame to dentists for, I suppose, shirking taking on NHS patients, right, as opposed to, you know, serving the private market. But, you know, with the finances as it is, it doesn't work right now for, I suppose, dentists en masse to take on hordes of NHS patients, even though they perhaps want to.
Yeah. And do we have any figures on how many people are having to, how many patients are having to switch to private dentistry? Because obviously we've had the equivalent on the general healthcare side, haven't we, Sarah?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's not entirely clear exact figures around how many people are switching to private dentistry, mostly because it's been semi-privatised for so long. Yeah. So many people have been using private healthcare, or perhaps flitting between NHS and private healthcare, or perhaps using a private healthcare insurance provider. But we do know that numbers of people using private healthcare in general, like you say, are really going up. And this is the same for private dentistry, seeing as it's got especially so hard to see an NHS dentist. So on the private healthcare side, around 1 in 8 Britons are now paying for private healthcare services. This is due to delays in getting NHS treatment. Mm-hmm. And an additional 27% are considering going private, but have for the moment decided against it because they can't afford it. So obviously, I mean, I was speaking earlier about how NHS dental charges have gone up in price, so that 45% increase. I mean, that's quite significant even for sort of NHS prices. So you're looking at, for instance, something like a filling going up from £50 to £73. But for private care, it can be almost double the cost of this.
The differences are crazy. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, just a consultation or examination, you're looking at about £74 on average. Something like a tooth extraction, having your tooth pulled out, £125. Root canal treatment, £400. So, yeah, I mean, the numbers are eye-watering, really. So when you look at sort of how much people are having to fork out because they don't have the capacity or the access to see an NHS dentist. And some people are also taking out private medical insurance, which can be a monthly sort of addition to their cost of living prices and how much they're having to pay for general monthly outgoings. That can be £20-30 a month. So yeah, it's quite significant, really.
Yeah. And if you can't afford, you know, if your work doesn't offer some kind of insurance scheme, or you can't afford these expensive procedures and you leave it, we all know what the consequences of that can be. And some of it can be extreme, like you can end up, you know, having sepsis if you leave a really bad tooth infection for a long time. You know, dentists often spot blood cancers and mouth cancers as well. So if you don't go and see your dentist, you might be missing out on that sort of early prevention side of things. I mean, do you know how much the dentistry crisis is affecting the nation's healthcare more broadly?
Yeah, absolutely. Like you say, it's certainly not just about people's teeth and gums and general mouth health. Poor oral health can be linked to some really serious health conditions. So obviously, like you mentioned, there's things like tooth decay, gum disease, but then also, like you say, cases of oral cancer are being missed. And because these are often caught early when people go for regular checkups, people aren't going for these regular checkups. So that really crucial, potentially life-saving preventative care is not happening. People are missing out on that. I mean, there's also from poor oral health, it's associated with a risk of other really serious health conditions, things like heart disease, diabetes, can even be associated with pneumonia because of the greater risk of infection. In pregnant people, for instance, gum disease has also been associated with premature birth, newborns being born underweight. And there's all sorts of issues, really. And then, as Harry mentioned earlier, the mental health impacts shouldn't be underestimated as well. And how sort of something like tooth decay or gum disease might really impact someone's confidence and how they feel about themselves. So I think there's plenty of quite serious health issues that people don't necessarily know about or consider when they think about oral health.
And Harry, you mentioned dental deserts.
Yeah.
And are these mainly sort of rural and coastal areas where you might not have the dentistry schools, you might not have as many dental graduates settling, and then you end up with sort of no NHS coverage for vast swathes of the country?
Yeah, parts of the country, you know, it sounds a bit convoluted, I suppose, like when we're talking about, you know, we're in London, but there are parts of the country where there are only one or two practices, for example, and, you know, a population of in the tens of thousands. And obviously the maths doesn't really bode well for that. But, you know, in one of the places actually that has one of the best provisions in the country is London, which may come as a surprise considering just how big the population is and how dense everything is. But even with London, I think it's about a quarter of practices in the capital are actually accepting new NHS patients. That was from the BBC investigation, which, you know, in of itself still isn't really great when it comes to looking at some of the deep pockets of poverty, for example, that are in the city and that, you know, people feel as though what they might not be able to access.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because I was going to ask which communities are sort of most disproportionately affected by this, because there is a correlation between poor dental health and poverty, like you mentioned.
Yeah, exactly what Harry said. As you can imagine, it's poorer communities. It's people from disadvantaged or minority backgrounds who are most adversely affected. Other groups who have been thought to be quite highly affected, people with complex needs, such as learning differences, autism, people who are refugees, homeless people, essentially all the first people to be pushed out of public services as they become more privatised. And I think this semi-privatised nature of dentistry is creating a bit of a two-tier system whereby those who can pay to have the private dentistry care are able to sort of access that care, whereas everyone else is increasingly being priced out and pushed out of NHS care as more resource, more recruitment goes into private dentistry.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Let's look at the politics of this, because as we've established, it is a political issue. People are noticing this problem and it has a knock-on effect for other public services as well. So what is the government currently doing? Trying to do about this. I'm saying trying.
Yes, well, I mean, call it a coincidence, but after the headlines and those pictures in Bristol the other week, I think it was the week after the government announced its emergency plan for dentistry, they're sort of calling it a £200 million plan, but there's a sort of a bit of issue of semantics around it, because as Sarah was sort of talking about, when it comes to dentists performing their allotted services from the government contract, they're required to complete, I think, around 96% of those required services. And if they don't, then the money that they are given is then taken back to the NHS centrally. So this 200 million is actually coming from the money that has been, that was already allocated to NHS dentists, but was underspent and is sort of being funneled into this new emergency plan. But I suppose it can be put down into three core bits. So they're taking action in a few ways. So they're organising these dental vans to go around the country to the dental deserts to give emergency treatment to those in the most isolated of situations. They're also going to give dentists a new patient premium of between £15 to £50, depending on the specific bit of treatment that they need for those who have not seen an NHS in the last 2 years. They're also upping the UDA, so basically the minimum payment of what a particular course of treatment will be paid.
UDAs,
units of dental activity. So they're basically categorised the different types of treatment that a dentist could give. So a checkup all the way to a tooth extraction. So the UDAs are at the first band of UDAs, the most basic stuff.
So that's their unit of measurement.
Yes, exactly.
That's what I was, when I was talking earlier about how treatments are sort of fit within bands and then priced based on those bands. They're given within those bands a sort of set number of units which are called these units of dental activity, and that's how they're priced, essentially.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And then the other two parts of the plan is to offer golden hellos to dentists. So it's basically an incentive to help fill these dental deserts. They're offering payments of up to £20,000 for dentists to go and work in these underserved areas for up to 3 years. And then there's a focus on public health. That sort of seems to be the move from both the government and the opposition when it comes to healthcare policy. So they're introducing a new Smile for Life initiative, offering advice to parents to help with their children and to, you know, instill good oral health from the early years. There's a lot of, I suppose, contention about whether that goes far enough. The sort of consensus is it doesn't, but the government seem to be sort of sticking to their guns with this one. So,
okay, and you mentioned Labour. I mean, you were with Preet Gill, who is the shadow minister, who this area comes under her brief. What are Labour planning to do about this problem?
It's quite similar in terms of what the government's already offered. So what they want to do is tackle the crisis as it currently stands. So they want to get a number of urgent dental appointments done. 700,000 is the target. And also do reform of the NHS contract as well. They also want to offer incentives to new dentists as well to work in the greatest need. So similar to those Golden Hello proposals that the government have already introduced. Their sort of big headline one is the supervised toothbrushing within schools for between 3 to 5 year olds, and of course a shift to focus on prevention so that everyone in the long term who needs one does have access to an NHS dentist. It will cost £111 million in total, which was going to be funded by abolishing the non-dom tax status, but of course that was already done by the government in the March budget. But it doesn't seem as though there is too much worry about how a potential Labour government could pay for that. It seems as though they're quite confident that they'd be able to find the funds through, like, freezing the tax thresholds, for example.
Yeah, and I've heard some misgivings about this assisted toothbrushing within Labour, because one of the issues is that actually it would require sort of greater provision elsewhere. So they've been warned by some nursery heads that they don't have the staff or the sinks to do that policy. So all of these things are connected. And I think when you start talking about these preventative measures, it's, you know, it relies on wider society, the wider state, being able to cope with whatever new things are being brought in that sense.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, there's been some fair dissent about it from teachers, for instance, who were already quite overworked. They're saying, where are we going to find the time to teach children about how to brush their teeth and their oral health? Like, that's not our job. So, I mean, part of Labour's plan is to include these toothbrushing sessions within their free breakfast clubs, which they're hoping to introduce into primary schools. So rather than have it as part of taking up the curriculum time or part of educational time, it would be within these free breakfast clubs, which they're hoping to have in all primary schools. And that's part of a wider child health action plan that Labour are planning, that is obviously has quite a big focus on prevention. So they're looking at things such as oral health, but also things such as healthier diets, which would therefore also reduce tooth decay. So looking at a watershed ban on junk food advertising, for instance, so a 9 p.m. ban, banning social media, unhealthy food ads aimed at children, introducing the free breakfast clubs, like I said. So I think it's part of a whole prevention sort of package, and the toothbrushing is just one part.
Okay. And how convinced were you by this, Harry? Because you were sort of on the trail with Labour's team. I suppose they were kind of fact-finding a bit while you were there.
Yeah, I think there is sort of the overall ambition, but I suppose, you know, the headlines doesn't... It makes it easy target, for example, to be like, you know, there are queues around the corner, people are, you know, in agony waiting for treatment. What's Labour's solution? It's toothbrushing in schools. I think it would be unfair to characterise it like that. You know, this is funded, fully funded, and it's ambitious. But I suppose when I put it to Preet Gill, actually, that, you know, relatively speaking, the issues that are raised here are the NHS contract. That's the sort of golden carrot here. And, you know, as much as these urgent appointments will go some way in helping, it's sort of putting a plaster on the broken pipe that is NHS dentistry. And reform is the thing that the BDA, the British Dental Association, are really calling for, and that isn't sort of coming anytime soon, whether Labour get in or the Conservatives hold on to power, because the government, in announcing its new plans, said that NHS dentistry reform will come in terms of the contract, but in 2025 at the earliest. And of course, if an election isn't held until later this year and Labour get into power early 2025, then people are still going to be waiting for quite a while. So it seems as though dentists are still sort of waiting in this purgatory, and they are asking for reform, but it doesn't seem that that will be coming anytime soon.
Okay, so we won't be seeing a new version of that contract?
No, not until early 2025.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you so much, both of you. That was a really, really thorough picture of what's going on in dentistry. Did you get any free dental care as part of your trip, Harry?
No, I think one of our producers did, though, didn't they? No, it wasn't. Well, I didn't get anything, but Preet Gill did. She was doing some role playing for us. And yeah, she went into the chair and got quite a thorough examination, but she didn't pay for it. So,
wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, this is the solution for our listeners. If you want to get seen by an NHS dentist, then join the Shadow Cabinet. Thanks so much for listening. If you'd like to submit a question for us to discuss on a future podcast, you can do so at newstatesman.com/youaskus. If you're listening on Spotify, just scroll down on the episode page and type your reply. Or if you're watching on YouTube, you can leave a question in the comments. You've been listening to the New Statesman podcast with me, Anoush Shakelian, and my colleagues Sarah Darwood and Harry Clark-Azidio. We'll be back on Thursday with the latest from the week in politics. This episode was produced by Catherine Hughes.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Trust in politics is broken, so can we get UK politics working again?
That was the last time we were happy. 2012.
I'm Beth Rigby, Sky's political editor. Join me every week with Labour's Jess Phillips and Conservative peer Ruth Davidson for some electoral dysfunction.
This idea of nuance has completely left politics. Yeah.
Together we'll focus on the policies that could deliver political satisfaction. Follow Electoral Dysfunction wherever you get your podcasts.